Welcome back, folks, to AOA. Thanks for making us a part of your day. This past week, a conference happened down in San Antonio, Texas, a conference to discuss the access to U.S. meat for consumers around the world. This was the U.S. Meat Export Federation's annual spring conference. Joining me today to discuss it and the topics that were raised by the participants today is Dan Hallstrom, President and CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Dan, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure, Mike. Good morning.
Tell us a little bit, what was the crowd like? How was the enthusiasm down there in San Antonio to discuss meat sales around the world?
Well, I have to say, Mike, attendance was a record for our May conference, and we had a lot of good participation. And I would categorize it as a tone of cautious optimism. I mean, obviously, we're coming off of records from last year, and the first quarter on beef were up slightly and pork were down slightly, but I think all things considered, everyone was in agreement that demand has been pretty good, in fact, record-breaking. But there's a lot of headwinds, as we all know, and that's why I say a little bit of a caution in the air, so to speak.
That certainly makes sense, Dan. And one place some of that cautiousness is coming from is China and our relationship with the second largest economy in the world. I understand one of your presenters was former Iowa governor and ambassador to China, Terry Branstad, discussing that country. What did he tell you? What did you learn about China as we enter this new era?
Well, it was great having Ambassador Branstad there and providing some really good perspective. And I think number one, everyone knows that on the political front, things are more tense than they have been. But on the, if you look at the history, and I go back to the Phase One trade agreement that was implemented in early 2020, I think we're all in agreement that this has been a very positive. In fact, you could almost categorize it as a home run for agriculture and specifically the beef and pork industry. So I think he was giving us some background on just how impactful some of the changes that came out of the agreement were. Now, everyone tends to focus on the goals, sales goals for agriculture, and well documented that we're a little bit short of the goals. But the reality is that we had a record-breaking year for beef and pork in 2020 and again in 2021. And while we may not hit the goals, we still had very, very good numbers. And some of the non-tariff trade issues, such as access for increased numbers of plants being approved, things like this were really impactful. And I think that was the takeaway, that even though we may not have hit the percentage goals, that overall this was very, very good for the U.S. Beef and pork industries.
That's a really good point. Even though we didn't hit the lofty targets that Robert Lighthizer negotiated, at the end of the day, Dan, we still put American meat in the mouths of a lot of new Chinese consumers who'd never tried it. Did Governor Branstad talk about the local reception to U.S. product?
Oh, without a doubt. And he was involved in a couple of them. When we rolled out to, I remember our rollout in, of U.S. beef, and he was, right there with us, with USMEF and USDA and the rollout events. And you're exactly right. There's folks in China that have never had the opportunity to try U.S. Grain-fed beef. And now that they have, we're seeing the results. Fast forward to 2021, end of the year, it was a $2 billion market for exports for U.S. beef. So without a doubt, he did reflect on that. And really, the discussion focused more on the future. Well, how much additional growth could we see? And China is a big part of our plans going forward on beef and the global network.
It is indeed. And as you look out both on beef and pork in China, you expect this year, as you mentioned, Dan, to be a little slower than the record-breaking pace of 2021. But overall, that demand is still expected to be strong throughout China?
Without a doubt. It'll probably be another new record on beef, albeit at a much slower rate of growth compared to last year. And on pork, we're seeing we're down, but we see the second half of the year improving over the first half of the year on pork. We're a very important trading partner of ours in China. But that being said, a lot of the conference also focused on diversification, and we can't lose sight of some of our other key trading partners in the region, you know, Japan, Korea, Philippines, Vietnam, et cetera. So that's really another key takeaway that came out of the conference was really spreading our eggs into a lot of baskets, not focusing on just one.
And you mentioned the Philippines. I understand you had Dave Renteria as part of a panel. He is the representative there in the Philippines. And of course, they're under discussions now to join that Indo-Pacific economic framework. Dan, what were Dave's thoughts? Is he excited about the potential for U.S. meat in Philippines?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, Philippines on both pork and beef is a virtual untapped resource. I mean, of course, we've been active there, and we've seen growth there, but there's a lot of potential in the future, in our opinion. And the panel that you mentioned really dealt on focusing on, rather than the modern retail sector, focusing on the traditional retail sector, the wet markets, the wholesale markets that feed into some of these other aspects of the economies, not only in the Philippines. We also had somebody on the panel from Colombia and Mexico. And, you know, the modern retail, the flashy modern retail gets a lot of the headlines, but the traditional wholesale and retail sectors, there's still a lot of consumption traditionally that happens in those sectors. And USMEF has been very active in those sectors of spreading our story, so to speak, on both beef and pork.
And does that story resonate? If I'm shopping at a local wet market in the Philippines, Dan, am I concerned about where that meat comes from? Can we market the American story?
We can. It's like anything else. It's about developing relationships with the trade, the importers, the distributors, and then ultimately the consumers. And like modern retail, people are concerned with quality. They're concerned with safety. They're concerned with versatility of the products. And, you know, oddly enough, a lot of our focus in these traditional markets is variety meats. And, you know, the versatility and the merchandising of a beef liver, for example, or a pork stomach, things like this, not something we focus on here in the U.S. a whole lot, but it's a big portion of our consumption in the global marketplace. And so very, very important that we go in there and tell our story.
Dan, we've seen the global grain trade impacted by the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Has the global meat trade been impacted nearly as much?
No, the actual meat trade has been less impacted from the standpoint of export of beef and pork. But that being said, of course, everybody's impacted by the grain impact. I mean, we all know what's happening with $7.50 corn and soybeans at levels not seen since 2012. And, the higher inputs, of course, eventually translate into higher costs for the meat as well. So I wouldn't say the impact has been direct, but without a doubt, the impact in the Ukrainian situation has been felt through the inputs, through the cost side of the beef, of the corn and the soybeans.
That certainly makes sense, and I'm sure a lot of producers on this side of the ocean can relate to that as well, those higher input costs. Dan, from a political perspective, as we head into the summer, are there any policy goals USMEF would like to see implemented here before we get to the midterm elections?
Well, we're always out there trying to facilitate increased access, in terms of broader scope of what we're able to do. And, there's several things going on currently that I would consider low-hanging fruit. We're sitting here with a situation in the Philippines with the quotas, reduced duty quotas, and ensuring that on the pork side, and ensuring that we're able to take advantage of those has been a real priority. And we actually got word late last week that it looked like they were going to come through. So that's a positive. And we're also looking at other situations around the world to put us on a level playing field. And I think The administration's been very good to work with. We recently had a resolution to our beef safeguard issue in Japan, which was welcome news because we ran the threat of annually having a disruption there in terms of reduced access with increased tariffs. We've now got that to where it looks like it will not have to be something we would have to worry about each year. So I think it's a big world out there. There's a lot of things going on, but that relationship and that business that we have through our trading partners with USDA and USTR is second to none. So yeah, we're looking forward to working closer together going forward and maintaining the good situation that we're in today.
And I would imagine USMEF would like to see a vote on Alexis Taylor for the USDA trade undersecretary role.
Without a doubt, yeah, we know Alexis from her previous role at USDA, and we're very supportive of that nomination. Hopefully, it can get expedited through the process. And of course, the next thing on our radar would be getting a chief ag negotiator in the USTR, and hopefully, that's coming sooner rather than later as well.
Indeed it is. We need those folks advocating for American agriculture on the global scene. Thanks to Dan Hallstrom, who does that every day as president of the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Dan, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.